dire. Tonight, the Sunak era beckons. Recent precedent suggests it could prove bumpy, unpredictable, and loaded with difficult decisions. Rishi Sunak will hope politics quietens somewhat. Even if it does, it's still likely to be pretty loud.
Our political editor, Chris Mason. BBC News.
Read by Vigiales. Now, what does it take to train a new police officer? Copper-turned comic Alfie Moore takes us through the 10-week journey in a moment. Before that, in 48 hours, we have this to look forward to.
On BBC Radio 4.
When I share a problem with my wife, she offers practical solutions.
A new series of sketches and stand-up.
I just want you to feel my pain.
What do you know about pain?
Rob Newman on air.
So I wrote out a series of cue cards. And so now, whenever I come home after suffering some humiliation...
It is so unfair that you, with your sensitive soul of a poet, should be exposed to such indignities.
The new 6:30 comedy for Wednesday nights.
And that was all I needed to hear.
On Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
Now on Radio 4, another real-life case from the police officer-turned-comic Alfie Moore to tackle with his audience of deputised detectives.
Hello, my name is Alfie Moore and welcome to It's a Fair Cop. The show where you, the audience, are sworn in to face the same policing dilemmas that I faced in today's real case. I've worked for over 20 years as a police sergeant in Humberside, but today I'm off my patch here in Banbury. A key base during the English Civil War for Oliver Cromwell, a man widely regarded as a ruthless, tyrannical, warmongering bigot, but he did ban Christmas, and so maybe not all bad. Banbury is the home of Thames Valley Police, the UK's seventh largest force with 4,250 officers and counting, because they are recruiting. Any takers? No. Okay. But what does it take to turn a regular person off the street into a confident, competent officer of the law? Well, you're going to find out, because today's show is about my time as a police tutor training up a new recruit. Now, recent changes mean that you need a degree to be a police officer, and so I do hope you're all suitably qualified. I'm not. I'm the living embodiment of experiential learning. I left school at 16, no qualifications whatsoever. Different process then. I went into Scunthorpe Police Station, got signed up for the office of constable. I only went in with a found dog. The new entry routes recently introduced by our professional body, the College of Policing, are pre-joined degree, where you spend 3 years and up to 30 grand funding your own specialist policing degree, at the exciting conclusion of which you are qualified to be repeatedly sworn at and vomited on during a 12-hour night shift in Scunthorpe Town Centre. Alternatively, those with an existing degree can utilise the degree holder entry programme and simply transfer your skills in modern dance. And listen, I know there are easy gags to be had there, but I like to look on the positive. It can be very effective searching a suspect for stolen and prohibited items using jazz hands. Finally, for the less academic like me, you can take a 3-year police constable degree apprenticeship. Now, my steelworks apprenticeship many years ago never resulted in a degree, but my dad said, get a trade, lad, and you'll always have something. And he's right, I've got tinnitus in both ears. There's an internal power struggle going on at the moment. Even though the College of Policing are insistent that degree entry should be the only recruitment path, some forces, including Thames Valley, are resisting and hanging on to the old probationary system, 2 years learning on the job. That's called the Initial Police Learning and Development Programme, IPLDP. Bit of a mouthful, so some forces call it IPLDIP. But to me, that just sounds like the missing Teletubby. You know, the rebellious one that's gone a bit rogue. Anybody seen Ipple Dip? Yeah, I saw him smoking a joint, screeching... screeching around the council estate in a hot-wired Astra with Tinky Winky in the boot. The college want the old system gone and have instructed all forces to cease the practice by June 2023. They want to take Ipple Dip outside and shoot him. Sorry, it's not real. Is this the right time to be raising barriers to entry when most forces are already struggling to recruit the numbers required? London's Metropolitan Police are finding it so hard to recruit that Sadiq Khan is offering a £5,000 cash bonus to any officer who transfers to them from a neighbouring force. And that £5,000 should just about cover the taxi fare in during the train strikes. Big problem for Sadiq Khan, but he does need to keep the buses running so he can throw the next police commissioner under one. Whatever your recruitment path, you will eventually undergo 10 weeks accompanied patrol with a tutor constable, which is today's real case. It's time to swear you all in as police officers. Repeat after me, you're Nick Sunshine.
You're Nick Sunshine.
Right, you're all coppers for the show. Now, tutor constable is a highly influential role and all part of my master plan to change the face of policing one mini-me at a time. Our real case starts on a bright Monday morning when I met 22-year-old Zoe. That may seem young, but recently the age you can apply to join the police has been lowered to 17. The parking is terrible at shift changeovers outside police stations with all the mummies picking up their student officers outside the gates. Zoe's just had 14 weeks classroom-based training, and my job is to help her develop the practical skills to apply that academic knowledge by taking her out for 10 weeks on the mean streets of Scunthorpe. 10 weeks to get her from raw recruit to independent patrol. I'll initially demonstrate how a task should be done, and then she takes the lead while I watch on. With that in mind, I demonstrate how to make the perfect brew. Strong but milky. Of course, the training phase is stressful and we should support a student officer's needs. One reportedly was allowed their snail at work as an emotional support pet. Sadly, that student officer didn't make it, although the snail's now a sergeant. And response times have quickened up. The police must change with the times, and I tell Zoe that I'm happy to embrace new teaching methods. I ask her how she's feeling on her first day, and she drops out the phrase imposter syndrome. Feelings of inadequacy and self-doubt are not uncommon when you start a new job, but I'd say more so in policing. When you walk out in a police uniform, there are no L plates. No one knows you're brand new or experienced, and it's scary. I explained to Zoe that when you put on a police uniform, there's an assumption that you're Superman, but when you first start, you're only Clark Kent. There's an element of fake it until you make it, but you can only do that by having presence. Presence is difficult to define. It's not a skill or a behaviour. It's a quiet confidence, an aura that can only be developed by doing. And so let's go out and do. Foot patrol is the best way to meet the public. Mothers reinforcing positive attitudes towards the police by shouting at the toddler, "You see them coppers over there? Well, if you don't behave yourself, they'll lock you up!" After a few days, I could see that although Zoe was a little reserved, she was trying to engage with people. I share with Zoe one of my personal rules, always try to make a friend. Doesn't matter if you're chatting in the street, dealing with a witness, victim or suspect, try and make a friend. Zoe seemed to have a fair share of common sense, which is a promising attribute. It can be very obvious very quickly that some people aren't going to make the grade. In August 2021, an aspiring North Wales police officer dialed 999 to inquire how his job application was going. I think I can answer that one for him. Now, I told Control that we were ready to attend straightforward jobs, and soon a call came in.
Tango Bravo 03, can you attend a report of youths causing annoyance with golf balls?
I said I can attend, but I don't have any golf balls. The situation was that elderly Mavis had rung in reporting two lads hitting golf balls in the public park, one of which narrowly missed her beloved Charlie the Chihuahua. We attended. I immediately turned my attention to the Chihuahua and said, "Poor little thing, is he all right?" And Mavis said, "That's a golf ball, the Chihuahua's over here." Charlie was okay, and Zoe and I round up the two kids, and Zoe says, "Let me take this." And I stepped back to give her space to work. Zoe was trying to engage with the young men and make friends, pointing out that they were behaving recklessly and someone could get hurt. But these lads were cheeky, street smart. It's the presence thing. And they could smell weakness, saying, "We always come here, we aren't hurting anybody." And Zoe's confidence wavered. And as it did, theirs grew and they began to control the situation. And I was getting more and more frustrated watching it. Audience cops, was it time for me to step in for the rescue, as we called it? So what do you think? Are you stepping in? Zoe is struggling with these two lads and I'm getting frustrated. Who is stepping in? Hello, who is it, please?
Gaynor.
Gaynor, you're stepping in.
Yeah, I just think that two people reading the Riot Act is better than one and they might take more notice of you both.
Okay, all right. But you don't think I might be undermining Zoe's sort of credibility and confidence by she was quite happy to deal with it, but you don't think I'd be undermining her?
I think she was losing it, so I think if you stepped in, she'd probably feel that she might be learning something from you.
Okay, thank you. Anybody disagree with that and think a bit of tough love is required?
Hi, I'm Lisa.
Hi, Lisa. You don't agree with that? You think a bit of tough love?
No, I think that if Zoe wants some help, then she'll ask you or she'll turn to you, and other than that, you should leave her be.
Okay, that's interesting. That's interesting. Thank you. My response was, I'd seen enough by this point, and I stepped forward. Teachers listening will know that you can't tell young people what to do. You have to encourage good behaviour to facilitate them making positive choices. And on this occasion, I gifted them with the power to choose one of two positive outcomes. I can either drive away with the golf clubs in the boot of my car, or I can drive away with them in the boot of my car. Whenever I confiscate things like catapults, booze or fags, I always say, if you want them back, tell your dad to come to the nick and ask for me. And then I'll tell him exactly what you were doing. They say you should never use emotional blackmail against children, but that's nonsense because it works a treat. And no one ever turns up to ask for them back. As we returned to the station, Zoe was even quieter than usual and she said, "I know I handled that really badly. I'm a police officer. I shouldn't be losing arguments with 12-year-olds. And I said, "Well, to be fair, I'm a police officer and I shouldn't really be threatening to lock them in the boot of my car." It's always a tricky balance deciding whether to let probationers make their own mistakes and choosing when to move in for the rescue. It depends on the individual. I've not always been that protective. We had a regular in Scunny called Frank Stokes. Now, old Frank had some attention-seeking issues and was always ringing the police or the paramedics, reporting that he was being burgled or having a heart attack. He wasn't, of course, but we were obliged to attend just in case. Well, I was tutoring a right clever dick. It was only his second day and he'd already knew more than me, wouldn't listen to a word I said, and I thought this is going to be a long, long 10 weeks. We got sent to Frank's address, the door was open, I walked into the lounge to see him laid prone, feigning death, as he'd done on numerous previous occasions. I knelt down, found a pulse, and was about to say, "Stop messing about, Frank, we're busy," when my new probationer pushed past me and announced, "Stand back, I'm a qualified first aider." As he went in for a sloppy mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, I was tempted to say something, but as I say, I'm a big fan of experiential learning. After a brief snog, Frank pushed him off And when the paramedics walked in, the probationer looked up and said, "We'd lost him, but I've managed to bring him back." Leading to a lovely moment when the paramedics, me and Frank, simultaneously burst into laughter. He was deemed such a good kisser, he was known ever after as Frenchie. After the golf club incident, I decided that it would be good to give Zoe some practice in remaining in control under pressure. Confrontation is not all about running street battles. At the time, we had a zero-tolerance seatbelt campaign on the go, and I said, let's do some enforcement. Anyone without a seatbelt gets a ticket. That's confrontation guaranteed. As always, I demonstrated the first couple and then pulled up a car where a young woman driving wasn't wearing a seatbelt, and I said to Zoe, let's see you issue a ticket. Zoe goes up to the window, and they smile at each other, and then Zoe steps back and says, you know you said always make a friend. She actually is a friend. I know her from college. I explained to Zoe that aligning your personal principles with the organisation's principles is one of the early transitions from civilian to police officer. I can help you develop various skills and behaviours, but some things you need to own from day one, like honesty and integrity. And so I asked Zoe, what do you think is the right thing to do? And she said, well, everyone else has had a ticket, and so she should too. And are you prepared to do that, Zoe? And when she said yes, I said, give me the book, I'll issue the ticket. The fact that she was prepared to issue the ticket was good enough for me. The real test of character is when you're faced with these decisions and you're on your own, when no one is watching. And if you think that's a difficult dilemma, let me tell you about the question I was asked during my training. You're on uniform patrol when you stop a vehicle that's been driven erratically, only to see that the driver is your own mother who seems a little tipsy. Take your pick, audience cops. You can do one of these three things. Option one, issue suitable advice. Option two, give her a lift home. Option three, breathalyze your own mum. So my first response is to send for backup, you know. So let's take a quick vote on that. Who's going to issue the advice? We've got nobody issuing advice. You can't tell your mum what to do. I get that, yeah. Who's giving her a lift home? Okay, quite a few giving a lift home. Okay, interesting. Let me talk to somebody who's going to breathalyse your own mum. Put your hands up if you're going to breathalyse your own mum. So most of the audience, you liars. Most of the audience is going to breathalyse your own mum. On that ground, then, have we got anybody that's actually in with their mum tonight? That's a long shot. Oh, there's a hand got up over there.
Hello.
Hello, what's your name?
Andy.
Andy, thank you, Andy. So you're with your mum tonight?
Yes.
And which one did you vote for, Andy?
Whichever one she said, I...
And just a quick word with your mum.
Mum? I wouldn't have been surprised if he would have breathalysed me. I do need a lift home, so I better not say too much.
That is an impossible question, and I have to admit I hesitated, and the sergeant looked to me and said, do you need any more information to make your decision? And I said, yeah. In this scenario, am I still living at home? In a situation like this, you have to detach yourself emotionally and simply consider these three evidential questions. What are the road conditions like? Can you smell it, intoxicating liquor? Did a sibling consistently get better Christmas presents? If the answer is yes, then snaps on. By the way, if you ever want to pass a recruitment or promotion board in the police, the correct answer is always to lock up your own mother. And I don't want to take the moral high ground when it comes to honesty. I mean, who hasn't told a little white lie for the greater good? When I first turned up for training, a surly inspector with a clipboard demanded, have you brought your English and maths O-level certificate? And I replied, no. And no one ever asked me for it again. which was lucky. I'm a terrible liar, but if I say no when I mean yes, I always get stuck on the N and say no. To be fair, I had to take a written exam, but that wasn't quite degree standard. From memory, the toughest question was, what's a big tall tower in Paris that rhymes with trifle? And if you put Arc de Triomphe, you could only be a police community support officer. Back to Zoe. And making mistakes is part of the learning process. If you do something daft in the police, there's a well-established cake fine system. More serious the error, bigger the cake fine. Zoe wasn't making any serious errors, just around the chocolate eclairs sort of mark. The most important thing is to straight away admit your mistakes. That's the only way in policing. In week four, there was a drugs warrant. There was lots of property that all needed bagging up. And so I left Zoe to it and popped back to the Nick. And Zoe realised that she'd sealed her own phone in the evidence bag. Now, officially, you're not allowed to break the seal on the bags once they're closed. Zoe did the right thing. She rang me for advice by pressing the buttons through the plastic. And she shouted through the bag, "What should I do? You better buy a large triple-layer Black Forest gâteau with extra cream and chocolate sprinkles." In 2020, a serving officer called Samory defied logic with his dishonesty and stupidity. He must have had a sizable cake fine as he went out in uniform to purchase a box of donuts from the local Tesco. But on seeing that a box of Krispy Kremes cost £9.95, he decided to find a small bag of carrots of exactly the same weight, worth 27 pence, and swapped the barcode. When he got to the self-service checkout and scanned the donuts, all the alarms went off as it was a northerner trying to buy a vegetable. He was found guilty of gross misconduct and sacked. Good. After 6 weeks, Zoe was getting there, though she was still a bit reticent. Others had noticed too, and she gained the nickname Nikki, as in Nikki Lauda, as she was so quietly spoken. She said that she didn't mind, as nicknames are just a thing in policing. They can, of course, be used inappropriately, but usually they're a positive sign of acceptance and part of the camaraderie. I tutored a really keen young probationer. You're not allowed to stop vehicles using the blues and twos until you've had an intensive 3-week response driving course. And this young man was waiting months, champing at the bit. Eventually, his course came through and he passed. He was ecstatic, and his first shift back, the sergeant threw him the keys to the response car and we all applauded. He dashed into the backyard, checked all the lights and sirens, jumped into the car and reversed straight into a telegraph pole. His response licence was immediately revoked. Now, his nickname was Dracula, and it was months later that he took me on one side at shift night out, and he asked, "Why do people call me Dracula? Is it because I'm pale or something with my teeth?" And I said, no, it's nothing like that. It's because when Dracula looks in the mirror, he doesn't see anything either. Zoe was now in the seventh week of our accompanied patrol training, and she's coming along slowly but surely. Her file work was immaculate. She was super reliable. I even had to tell her to stop coming in so early, as she was making me look bad. Then one morning, she took me on one side and she said, "I don't think policing is for me, and I've typed out my resignation." When I asked why, she said, "Firstly, I'm really not sure I'd be very good at it. And secondly, I've been offered another job as a personal assistant to a manager in a local company, more money without the tiring shifts." Policing, like nursing, used to be considered a vocation, not anymore. Did you know when Theresa May was Home Secretary, she cut police starting pay by £4,000, which led to the surprising and unpredictable development that if you reduce pay and conditions to the point that many police officers are actually having to visit food banks, then you might get a reduction in quality applicants. Who knew? The current attrition rates in policing are awful. What is the point in raising educational entry standards if you don't pay them enough to keep them? Thank you. I I couldn't comment on her other job offer, but I could tell her that I believe that she has the potential to become an excellent police officer. I know that confidence is an issue, but you're 7 weeks into practical training. I don't want you to make any rash decisions that you may regret. I said to Zoe, what I would like is for you to put the resignation letter in your drawer and finish our 10-week attachment. If you still feel the same, after that, I won't push back. And she agreed, and we went back on the streets in our superhero costumes, Scunthorpe's very own dynamic duo. Soon, we were in the last week of training, and one evening we were walking through a housing estate when I noticed a group of four lads in their late teens walking towards us, one of which I recognised as Bugsy. He got his nickname not because he was a gang star, but due to his larger-than-average front teeth. I knew that Bugsy was wanted for assault, and I had to make a snap decision as to whether to make an arrest. Rightly or wrongly, I instinctively grabbed Bugsy's arm and told him he was under arrest. He immediately resisted, and I took him straight to the floor with a leg sweep. I had him pinned down on the ground, and I hit the red panic button on my radio for backup. The other three could see I was down and vulnerable and decided to join in. One of them moves in and lands a hefty punch. He's just winding up for another when Zoe steps forward, baton fully extended, and whacks him on the arm. He moves back and they face each other. In training, you're taught to rest the baton on your shoulder and extend your free hand to push people away while calmly shouting, "Get back! Get back!" She, however, adopted a technique all of her own. Which consisted of a double-handed grip and waving the baton in a figure of eight, lightsaber style, while screaming, "Come on then, have some of this!" She was still doing it when reinforcements pulled up in a police van a couple of minutes later. As Bugsy and his punching accomplice were led away, Zoe and I looked at each other. In that moment, we both knew her inner superhero had landed. From that day, her nickname was no longer Nikki. It was Skywalker. Zoe put her resignation letter in the shredder, and the next day, I arrived for work with a celebratory tub of heroes. Only to be told there was someone waiting to see me in the foyer. Big, rough-looking bloke, about 6 feet 4, with a shaven head, looked like Tyson Fury. I politely inquired, "Can I help you?" And he said, "Is it true you've got my golf clubs?" I wasn't going to be intimidated and back down. I said, "Yes, and the reason is that your son was using them to commit antisocial behaviour." "And is it also true that you threatened to put my lad in the boot of your car?" And I said, "No." Zoe completed her 10 weeks and I signed her off as ready for independent patrol, and it was the end of the beginning of her career. She'd taken a little while to find her inner superhero, but that's okay. It's not one size fits all. I'm proud to say that some years later, Zoe became my inspector and was one of the best supervisors I've ever worked for. In my professional experience, I genuinely believe...